by the Iowa High School Athletic Association and your local National Weather Service office.
Ladies and gentlemen, our oceans are in trouble. Careless activities by people at sea and on land have created the dire state of the oceans today. Routine activities on land and water contribute to 6.4 million tons of debris entering the ocean every year. If you care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
No, thank you, and thank everybody for tuning in to WUSB Stony Brook. The time is just about 6 o'clock, and once again, that means it's time for Off the Wall.
Brown's in the house one time, and we repping the 504 all day, every day. This is my city, my hometown. They ain't representing, so I gotta hold it down. Say this is my city, my hometown. They ain't representing, so I gotta hold it down now.
Off the wall, you're listening to some music from New Orleans.
Wow, you sound great.
Thank you.
Whoa. I gotta turn my headphones down. It sounds so good in here. That was a good jam.
Thank you very much.
I like the 504.
You know, we're still in a New Orleans mood.
Sorry, I have to get used to how beautiful this WUSB control room is making us sound.
It's massive. It's so massive. You're just a little dot in the horizon. That's how big you are, because this room is so huge.
Spacious and high-tech.
People will get lost here. People will definitely get lost in this room. I'm lost already. but we're back, and we've got New Orleans on our mind. That's why we played that song from the Hot 8 Brass Band, New Orleans After the City. And what a magical place that was. You know, we were away for almost a month, mostly by land. We flew over to Seattle, and then we took trains down to the Bay Area, to Los Angeles, a train all the way from Los Angeles to New Orleans, on the southern route, which we had never taken before.
Right.
And then we spent, we only spent a few hours in New Orleans the first time because we had to drive all the way up to Tennessee to see the eclipse. And wow, if you heard last week's show, you know the effect that had on us. That was
spellbinding.
It was spellbinding, yes.
Spellbinding.
There's no other word for it. Spellbinding. Absolutely spellbinding. I don't know when I was as spellbound as that. But boy, yeah, that was something. That was, and you could not have experienced that here in New York because it wasn't a total eclipse in New York. So, not to rub your nose in it, but it wasn't the same.
Oh, please! That we were doing work. We brought that to the people. Okay, we can't turn it off. We had to share this. And it was cool.
Already nominated for the best radio coverage of a total solar eclipse.
Community category. Yeah, that's right.
And thank you for that, Eclipse people that did that. Just seeing that happen. It was only for 2 minutes. We were in Goodlettsville, Tennessee, a town I'll never forget. We had our eclipse glasses. We got the last day thanks to the people at the hardware store who ordered 4,000 pairs.
A very cool story about that. And we talked about that when we were recounting everything that we'd done.
We talked about it last week, but it's such a good story, it's worth talking about twice. We were at a local breakfast place because we believe in going to local places. And the waitress told us, hey, yeah, you're looking for glasses? They just got 4,000 pairs down at the hardware store. And so we dropped them. No, we finished. We finished what we were eating, and we ambled on over. And we had to wait online, and we got our glasses at a reasonable price too. You know, I heard of people on other radio shows who paid something like $69 a pair, and that was ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. It's good not to get taken when you have an event and the situation begets a lot of people being taken.
Uh-huh.
The only thing you should be taken with is the beauty of the celestial bodies doing things. And boy, that was, I guess, getting in line, waiting in line, dealing with things, finding out things locally. That was the theme. That was definitely how we got through the South. And I had a lot of prejudice. I had a lot of concerns, a lot of unfamiliarity, basically, mm-hmm. is what it boils down to. And it's like any place, it surprises you. It changes you. You get a real impression of the overall good that is in the world.
Absolutely. And in fact, if you listen to our recording from last week where we were driving through, where we were driving from Louisiana into Mississippi, we just crossed the border, and I was saying how scared I was. I'm in Mississippi, and I'm scared. And, you know, it's dumb to feel that way. It really is.
Also, and you start saying that, you start acting that way, yeah. And then you really become a scared person. You know, you can't succumb to that. You have to disappear, shed your premonition, your preconceived notions.
Exactly.
And,
you know, there are evil people in the world, absolutely, but there are not evil evil places.
There could be evil people at the end of your driveway.
There are evil people right here in the station right now.
Wow. Oh.
Well, we can fit a lot of people in here. That's why I say that, because, you know, we don't know where they're all coming from.
Don't name names. Don't name names.
No, I wouldn't do that. But my point is that, you know, in a place like Mississippi, in a place like Alabama, in a place even like Louisiana and Tennessee, we had nothing but good times. We had nothing but good interactions with people. People were extremely nice and generous and kind. And also, you know, a joy to talk to. To basically lump all of what we call flyover territory, you know, as one type of thing, that's doing them a disservice, doing us a disservice, because we're cutting off potential alliances that I think are extremely valuable. And I got so much more out of talking to people there who had more than a clue than I do talking to people here who I assume have more of a clue, because, you know, that's not always right either. There are people around who you think are enlightened who are not. And then again, your sense of what enlightenment is might be completely wrong as well. And you only get that revelation through conversation.
Yeah, we get too granular with stuff in maybe these urban environments, and I think it takes getting out of your normal realm and the spheres, and actually coming as a stranger and, you know, sort of sussing people out, actually hearing them, feeling out where they go in like a conversation. I felt like Eclipse was a great sort of neutral ground that everyone was thrilled. As soon as we told people locally, whatever town it was, this is what we're doing, this is why, they immediately knew why we were traveling and so on and so forth, which really broke the ice to have other conversations, and that kept happening over and over again.
Well, you know, if you think about it, it's these common events, whether it's a team that has a winning season, whether it's a celestial event, whether it's a weather event, whether it's just something that you can share. That is how you bridge gaps, and that is what we need to be doing so much of today is bridging gaps.
Okay, so details. What was your? You mentioned Mississippi. I was a little concerned about that. We were at that point driving on the roads.
Yes.
So you have the quintessential. I could get pulled over and have to talk to a cop from another state.
Didn't get pulled over once.
Didn't get
pulled over.
We're good drivers.
Well, we're good drivers too. Yes.
We're good drivers. So, but what other places? There were so many different stories along the way. We could talk a lot in detail about trains going through some of the states we didn't actually spend time in. We just sort of got off the train. But we did that as much as possible so we could see even the train stations.
Yes.
Or like in Portland, remember? I kept grabbing all the free newspapers.
Yes.
And then we would have all this reading material on the train.
They had a lot of free newspapers there, including what was it, the Asian Reporter or something like that?
Yeah.
I have a free Asian Reporter. What a weird newspaper to just have lying around the train station in Portland. But it was interesting. I read it on the train.
It's a window into the community, into what's going on, and it felt good. It felt good to be informed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That was a one little thing, but there were so many other little adventures and side stories and side tracking that was a lot of fun.
There is an adventure and a side track and a DVD extra that we have here right now. I don't know if you remember this, but we were just talking about Mississippi. There's a bit that we did not air last week that happened right after we finished recording in Mississippi. We make reference to it. Boy, the sky looks cloudy up ahead. Almost as soon as we cross into Mississippi, all of a sudden, we hit the storm of storms. Of course, not to compare it to the storm of storms currently hitting Houston, but it was something.
Let me guess. You've got that queued up.
I've got that queued up right now, and I intend to play it.
With the simple push of a button.
Well, there's nothing simple about pushing buttons here, but let's go back to about a week and a half ago. The second part of us driving through Mississippi, only a couple of minutes long, but you'll get a sense as to how scared we were, not because of people, just because of nature.
Yeah, so this is really crazy. We're in the middle of Mississippi, and the sky just opened up, and we are on an interstate, and you might hear the rain hitting the car. This is like nothing I've ever seen. We're going maybe 20 miles an hour at max with our flashers on. Everybody around us is also going really, really slow. It's pretty scary. You can't really see much in front of you. And it just suddenly happened. This is, and people are pulled over to the side. There's water all over the street. Well, Kyle, you're the passenger. How do you feel?
I'm terrified. Definitely, this is like whiteout conditions, but it's water. We are in a deluge of rain. Barely able to see, tons and tons of water. A lot of people are pulling over. We went basically from highway speeds down to about 20 miles an hour.
That was close. That was the closest lightning hit yet. And, you know, we've seen bolts of lightning coming down. So, you know, that could happen right in front of us at any moment. So it's frightening. It's very scary.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. I'm, like, making sure I'm not touching metal and I think we're okay, but it's, you know, we're not the tallest thing. There's a lot of trees around us. But this is certainly an unbelievable experience. Just a couple miles into Mississippi.
I tell you, as soon as you enter Mississippi, man, it happens. Something happens. And here we are, and we haven't seen rain the entire trip. We've gone from New York to Seattle, all the way down the Pacific Coast, and then all the way across to New Orleans. And it really wasn't until here that we saw a drop of rain. And this is a lot more than a drop of rain.
No, this is sheets and sheets of rain. Visibility is improving a little bit. We seem to be going into different phases of the rain. Visibility improves a little bit. As I said, everybody has four-way flashers on. We've got our headlights on. Wipers are going as fast as they can. This is really unbelievable. Spectacular display of Mother Nature and the hydrologic cycle, as it were.
And we're recording this right before the total eclipse of the sun in a couple of days. So you can imagine if this happens then, people will curse nature forever. Hopefully nature's getting this out of her system now so that we can have clear skies so everybody can enjoy the eclipse.
Yes. And to take our minds off it, I'm looking for food in Hattiesburg, which is our next sort of destination, next place we'll be going through.
Food and shelter.
And shelter of some sort, because if it's like this, we're going to need it. We also need eclipse glasses, so I think we're going to try to hit a Walmart. Walmart's likely to have it, because they've got this satellite-controlled supply chain, so I'm sure they've got them. And lowest prices, you know. Can't beat Walmart prices.
Walmart in Alaska is likely to have it. I don't know about Walmart anywhere near where the eclipse... Oh, look, it's getting sunny now all of a sudden. Wow. Thank you, Mississippi.
Yeah, we have a little bit more visibility. It's something like maybe 5 miles. We can see the a little bit further in the horizon. Rain is thinning out now. We still have a lot of thunder behind us, and wow, plenty of moisture.
Okay, let's relax again.
Okay.
Wow. That check from Walmart get here yet, Kyle?
No.
Lowest prices. Well, no, we didn't go into a single Walmart the whole time.
No, it didn't end up being that they were the ones they did not supply us, furnish us with these sun goggles. We went to
Ace Hardware.
Oh, so where's your check? This is community radio. WUSB Stony Brook. You're listening to Off the Wall with Kyle and Emmanuel. I was really impressed that that rain was in fact not racist rain. It was just regular water.
Regular water just hits everybody the same way. That was the scariest part of Mississippi, I guess, other than our preconceived notions. But yeah, like I said, the people were great. The food was amazing. I mean, everything there is so fresh. Well, at least if you get the right things, it's fresh and hearty and all that. And there's a certain sense of pride in just what comes out locally. And also, you know, we have these visualizations of how places are, and the people there are happy. They are, you know, the ones we saw anyway, getting along with each other and taking care of each other and things like that. It doesn't mean that there aren't things that are still very, very wrong that need to be fixed, but. It's not the kind of place you might expect. That's really what I got out of it.
Yeah, and then speaking of like chain stores and stuff, there are a lot of chains and food, but we sought out local traditions, local stuff to get away from that. But people are happy with that, even though there are a lot of homogeneity as far as the same types of stores or brands. But it's part of the culture, and I think people. Even have they have a kind of jovial nature about it. There's this one chain in Nashville, mm-hmm. Dollar General, that comes up. And what was the other one that was people were laughing about?
Waffle House.
Yeah, it was no Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel.
Right. People, we were listening to the Grand Ole Opry on the night of the eclipse.
I don't think we mentioned this last week.
No, we should.
What we do is we always try to listen to local radio, and that I cannot. It's not just because we're on local radio here, but I can't emphasize enough how valuable that is. When we were going into Tennessee, I knew that WSM was the radio station. They're at 650 on the AM dial.
You were on top of it right away.
I memorized these things ever since I was a kid. I knew WWL in New Orleans was 870 AM, and you can hear these stations thousands of miles away because they're clear channel stations. We went over this, too.
Not the brand.
Not the company.
The concept.
And the company doesn't exist anymore, fortunately.
Yes. They have a lamer name, iHeart something. But
something stupid.
It is the concept of clear channel.
A clear channel radio station is basically an AM radio station, usually broadcast at about 50,000 watts. And at night, what happens when the sun goes down, AM waves go a lot further. Most stations have to lower their power at sunset. These stations do not. Stations like WABC, WCBS, they are clear channel stations, and they are able to be heard very, very far away at night. And that's how I knew about WSM. That's how I knew about WWL. And their call letters alone tell you that they're old stations. They only have three letters. And you can't do that anymore. You can only do that back in like the 20s and 30s. These stations have been around for a long time. So we were basically on our way to Nashville because we knew that was within the zone of the eclipse, and we were going to stay in a small town near that. I wanted to hear something local in the city we were going to, and we turned it on Saturday night. What's playing? Grand Ole Opry, which is the oldest radio show in the country. It's been on since the 20s, 1929 or something. And it's basically broadcast out of Nashville. They're playing country music and various other things, things you would not expect us to be into. But when you're going into a place like that, you have to open yourself up a little bit. We're listening to the music. We're hearing them, as you said, make fun of each other, talking about the eclipse and all kinds of really funny self-deprecating humor.
The phrasing, yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a variety show, so they have some comedy bits. They definitely have interludes where people are hosting or introducing the next guest and whatnot, but that came up there. The tongue-in-cheek kind of, like you said, self-deprecating, the ability to know your community, and they get it. People, they can take a joke. They participate in that culture or not, and they're aware. And it's those local metaphors and stories that are really fascinating. They really bring you in as an outsider into what the attitude really is. We might make fun of these things outwardly, but they get it too.
So do they. They make fun of it as well. That's the amazing thing. And you know, you might be traveling to a distant city or a foreign country or a place nearby that's just different, and you could be listening to the music that you like, the things that you're familiar with, or you could change it up a bit and listen to something that is popular locally, just like you'll try the food that's popular locally. You'll get so much more out of the experience, and I think we did listening to Grand Ole Opry driving into Nashville as they're broadcasting live, which was really awesome because it was Saturday night and that's when their show is. Talking about the upcoming eclipse, which we're looking forward to ourselves.
And they had a bunch of specials lined up, and were broadcasting the day of the eclipse, which was unusual for their format. But it was just so cool to be in the same place as all this stuff is going on, these special experiences. And Nashville was great. Tennessee was interesting. We walked around a lot there.
You found East Nashville?
Yeah, Germantown.
German, that's the cool part of town.
It's sort of, it's hip, I guess. It's hip.
It's not too hip, but it's hip.
It might be accused of being hip.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. But an interesting neighborhood nonetheless. Very late night for us. That was the night we stayed up, and Nashville kept us busy. We were able to stay awake, and
we saw two movies. We went to the multiplex.
We also just circumnavigated the city a couple times, because if you're familiar at all, Nashville's roads kind of go in a big circle around the city.
The interstates do, yes.
Indianapolis
is the same way, and Washington, D.C. A lot of cities do that.
Yeah, and so it can make for some confusing driving, but it is very easy to get in and out of town.
Well,
after
the fourth revolution, we finally figured it out that actually we're not going anywhere. We're just going in a big circle, so
right.
Let's get off this road already.
Right.
And that killed a few hours, so we were happy. We planned the whole night. We planned what we were going to be doing. We're going to get food after the two movies we saw, one of which, by the way, was an Inconvenient Sequel by Al Gore, native of Tennessee. We saw his film in his state. It's just too bad the theater screwed up the film the way they did.
Oh, man.
They cut off the top and the bottom of the picture, and every person who was captioned, who was speaking in the film, also had a title. We didn't see what the title was. We just saw their name. So we had to pretty much figure out who people were and why they were relevant. And other things, too, just were cut off.
It made
I told them about it later. But,
sorry.
I think they fixed it. I hope they fixed it.
Yeah, it really did. It made the production look sloppy, which it was hard to decipher. Is this the way they meant it, or is this the theater screwing it up? And I think it was the latter, because they also had problems even turning the projector on when we walked in.
Well, I like to credit myself as saving the film, because we walked in there and they're playing the previews, but there's no picture. And, you know, in the old days, I know there was a different projector that did the previews than that did the actual feature. So maybe that's the one that's broken and the other one would be fine. But in this day and age of digital, everything is probably all on the same computer. So yep. I took the long, long trip down to the hallway, because it's like 18 theaters, 18 screens. You have to go downstairs, escalators and everything like that. And I said, you know, you have a problem in Theater 6. You got to turn the projector on with a light or something. And eventually they got around to it, and we saw some of the previews and the film. Yes. But if I hadn't done that, the other two people in the theater would not have seen the film.
Yeah, it's traditional to be able to watch the action as well as hear it.
Yeah, I'm a traditionalist in that sense.
You sure are.
So we went downtown after that, and, you know, I have to say, it was a Sunday night, and Nashville was very drunk. A lot of people were just staggering around the streets. I guess because there were so many more people in town. They say the population doubled because everybody was staying there to see the eclipse the next day. And a lot of people were up late, and I saw a lot of people just who had a little bit too much, just put it that way.
Yeah, we found a 24-hour spot to just get a cup of coffee and get our second wind on staying up. And, boy, people were in and out, cups, glasses falling and shattering. And it was nice amount of chaos, kind of like an average Thursday in the Lower East Side, I guess.
I don't think it would be an average anything in the Lower East Side. It was different. It was definitely different. But it was fun. And then we just drove around a little bit after that and then started to wake ourselves up and have more coffee. And before we knew it, eclipse time was upon us. And, boy, you know, it worked out great, because the clouds came in. The clouds, they said, weren't going to come in, did come in. And, in fact, if you listen to the recording, the first part, the sun was obscured. But fortunately, it came out for the totality that lasted about 2.5 minutes. And I just... You know, I was speechless then. I'm still speechless just thinking about it now, because seeing it is really the only way to experience it. There's no picture that has captured it. There's no documentary that has that can prepare you for the sight of a solar eclipse, which you see through your naked eye. You don't see that through the eclipse glasses because there's nothing to protect your eyes against at that point. But that's the only time you can look.
Yeah. It is a variety of factors, though, time and place, and we were in the right place at the right time and could do so much to see it with our bare, with our own eyes, mm-hmm. naked eyes.
Yes.
Nude eyeballs.
Someone should tell Trump that, though. I mean, he was looking directly
at the
damn sun.
I saw the pictures, yeah. Well, speaking of which...
No, he's an idiot. I'm sorry. There's just no other word for it. He's an idiot. All the people saying, do not look at the sun when it's not in totality, and he was not in a place where it was ever in totality, and there he is looking straight up. Role model for the rest of us? I don't think so. I'm sorry. I said I was going to tone it down today, and I intend to.
Never have truer words been spoken.
There's this whole hurricane thing going on in Houston.
Oh,
people already heard
Democracy Now. No, I'm mad because Democracy Now! Is really succinct in saying that these people, you know, their leadership going down there, talking about all the good things and great people and all of that, but mm-hmm. their policies are leading to a lot of this, or at least they're protecting individuals and entities that are culpable, and it grizzles, makes my blood boil.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Because there should not be. It should not be that thousands of people are displaced. It should not be that that they're suffering. Even if everything possible is done for the climate, these areas constantly have to rebuild. And I saw a lot of this and had a lot of observations, specifically in New Orleans, about infrastructure and things not really ever getting repaired or getting the attention they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And we have similar examples. Maybe they're less severe examples in big cities, but it's all the same.
Infrastructure isn't a reality. It's something we have to face. And when you don't have adequate plans or supplies or mechanisms as a part of your city planning, when things go wrong and the mechanisms in place aren't sufficient, the consequences can be very unforgiving, and it ought not be. I mean, there was all this preparation in the news and all of that, you know, for a couple days, but clearly that's not enough. And I guess we just we're not learning this fast enough, and I fear that we're bound to just see more and more of this, and it'll just be like a big thank you fest for leadership such as what we've earned, and that'll be the end of it. So they'll go and thank themselves and pat each other on the back and then continue to support the policies and things that aren't that are converse to what would actually serve people.
I agree with that. They're the only people that should just do their job. The only people that I think should be thanked and revered are the people of Houston, the people of the area who are risking their lives, volunteering, taking boats, saving people, things like that. Those are the real heroes. Everybody else is doing their job, and that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to allocate funds and make sure that things are available and the infrastructure is kept in a state where we can actually use it. And so often in the past, as you said, there have been things that have worked against that. We're seeing the fruits of that now. Maybe this isn't the best time to point fingers and be accusatory, but let's not forget that so many things have come about because of bad policy, not the least of which is the inability of people in power to come to terms with climate change. This is without question a side effect of climate change. To have all these storms of the century, you know, there's something wrong with having multiple storms of the century within 10 years or so. We had Katrina, we had Sandy, we have Harvey, not to mention all the other floods and blizzards and various other things that have happened that didn't happen before. And to accuse scientists of having an agenda of saying that, what is the agenda? What exactly is it that they're after? What do these people think scientists are gaining by perpetuating a hoax of climate change? I just would like to follow that train of thought. I can see why they wouldn't want to embrace the concept of climate change, why these rich people, politicians, business people, whatever, because they might have to invest something, they might have to spend something, they might have to dismantle something. But you know what? In the end, we're human beings, we adapt, we figure out ways to make things work in the face of adversity. Hey, while we were driving and taking trains, we looked out the window. We saw wind turbines in places you would not expect to see wind turbines. We saw lots of solar panels. People are figuring this out. And, you know, it's great to lump everybody into one basket, but that's not how it works. There are all kinds of individual local stories of triumph, and that's what we need to be focusing on. Are those people following their lead, not the lead of people who just don't get it? And I'm hoping that this Harvey catastrophe is a real wake-up call, especially considering the region that it hit. I mean, Texas, I have a dim recollection of this when Sandy hit us in New York, that it was politicians in Texas who were against putting more money into Sandy recovery. I don't think politicians in New York will vote against putting more money into Texas recovery from Harvey. Let's hope not. Let's move past this silliness.
Yeah, the people that rise to the occasion, they get it. They see what's going on. They accept that we do need to pivot on some of these technologies, and there are entrenched interests that don't necessarily want to invest or change the way they do business, and they don't want to diversify and take a risk on a new market that perhaps they haven't traditionally been experts in. They just want to continue to be experts in whatever entrenched mineral or other resource they're exploiting for profit. And if scientists could be accused of having an agenda, I would say it's an agenda for transformation, for transformative technologies that will have less of an impact on things like climate systems in the future. But I think that's a good thing. And less short-sighted multinationals and energy conglomerates would, I think, embrace that and see the challenge as much as they see the challenge in drilling, you know, under ice caps or whatever harebrained thing they're trying to sell people on, or lobbyists or whomever on. I think it's as much of a challenge. It's different. Yeah, different. Different technology, different science, different way of looking at some of the problems. But it's laziness, I think, is what it, laziness and greed is really what it boils down
look
to.
Look at the richest people now. Look at the people who are most successful. The people who started Google, the people who started Tesla, the people who started SpaceX. Are they doing the same thing that was done for the past 20 years, 50 years, 100 years? No, they did something different, something unheard of, and something that was a bit risky. That's how you succeed. You don't succeed by reopening the coal mines and going back to the way things were. Been there, done that. Let's do something else. Let's listen to people who know what they're talking about. And, we can say this is Trump's finest hour, and I guarantee you people will say that. It's not a hard thing to do, all right? You know, a sixth grade class could accomplish this. Basically, give money to the people who need it. Give food to the people who need it. Show your face a couple of times, wave, get the hell out of there. And you'll be judged as a success in dealing with a catastrophe. Okay, great. But there is so much more to this than just that. There are all these absurd policies and statements and just neglect. And that needs to continue to be called on as some of the biggest failings in our culture.
Yeah, there's a lot of the wrong talk and no action. Or action that's destructive. And frankly, the waving your hands and getting out of there thing, that's like really symbiotic with what he's already doing as far as going to rallies to get his poor snowflake-ish confidence up or whatever, you know, it takes. But
boy, the snowflake thing really gets me. Because, you know, they call us snowflakes. And then when we hit back, all of a sudden, we're thugs and goons in Antifa. And that's the thing. You know, if you look at Fox News, you look at the New York Post, you listen to Trump, Antifa, that's what we should be concerned with and how they're being violent. Well, you know what? They're being violent against fascist Antifa. You know, that's sort of what it's all about. And I think, you know, we were violent in World War II against kind of the same thing. And I don't think anybody was criticizing the Americans for being violent. Well, maybe towards the end a little bit. But point is, you have to fight the evil in our world. And fascists are evil, so bring it on, you know. These are people you should be attacking. I just don't get the criticism of these so-called snowflakes finally fighting back and saying, no, we're not going to let you do this. And tearing down the statues and you know, hitting a Nazi or two. I'm all for that.
Yeah, I think that if you're concerned that Antifa is showing up, perhaps you should stop looking like a fascist.
Yes.
And behaving so taking on the regalia and language of that. I mean, they are sensitive to that by definition. So when you're appearing that way and perhaps taking lives in the process, I don't think you should at all be surprised when you know, someone or another is maybe punched back or resists being sprayed. You get sprayed if someone sprays you. I mean, it becomes a quasi battlefield, but in the realm of speech and activism, and it is about action. So when people are moving and marching and acting in one way, you had better expect there will be a counter to that.
How many people has Antifa mowed down with a car? who are protesting. How many people did Black Lives Matter mow down in a church just for the color of their skin? Look at the numbers. Look at the history. And you'll see the reaction is very, very different from the actions. The actions are the problem, and that is what needs to be focused on. Anyone who's focusing on something else, I think they're trying to cover up the actions. I think they're trying to make excuses. Yeah, Antifa can say nasty things, and you know, they'll throw tear gas back at the cops. You know what? Did you see the video? My God, this really upset me. So the cops threw a tear gas canister at these demonstrators. One of the demonstrators just basically kicked it back, not even harshly, just kicked it back in their direction. They shot him. They shot him in the groin with a pellet or something. Everyone's laughing at this. Oh, he got what he deserved. No, he didn't. You should be able to shoot the cops now. That's what I think. You know, he was just standing there. They shoot him because he doesn't want to be tear gassed by them. They think that's justified. Well, how do you like it when it happens to you? But all of a sudden, you even touch a cop, and it's like the worst thing in the world. We're all human beings. We have to come to terms with this and not put people on pedestals. You know, the way that the inequity just continues disturbs me so much.
Yeah, and I don't see law enforcement as martyrs for very much. It's their job. They have ample equipment.
They got gas masks. They got vests.
And resources. And this blind, you know, gushing allegiance from, frankly, idiots.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And you know what? We're open. We went down, you know, we traveled. We've kind of reset. We're willing to help change maybe someone who's been led astray, someone who can admit they're wrong, but you have to be able to realize you're on the wrong side of things. You have to admit that to yourself first and engage people.
I think the engaging comes first because no one's going to admit that right away. They're going to have to get there. And having the conversation, always open to having the conversation. And also, let me clarify, too. I don't see cops as the enemy. A lot of people I know do. Cop, by definition, is a bad guy. Not true. Not true at all. It's like anybody else. They're human beings. They're just like us. And I don't think cops want to shoot people. But there are some psychos that do. They need to be found. They need to be punished for what they do. And their fellow cops need to stand up to them. That doesn't happen enough. That's a huge problem. But to simply label people because of their job or their position, that's where we get into bad places. But that said, you know, I think that we have to stop letting certain groups of people just get away with murder because, well, they can, you know. Oh, I feared for my life because this guy was holding a banana, so I shot him. Oh, sorry, didn't mean to do it, but, you know, we saw the film Detroit recently where I don't know how much of that was actually true. I recommend people see this film, but it's very, very disturbing about the riots that happened in Detroit back in the 60s and how these cops just went on a killing spree inside a motel because somebody fired a blank, made a sound of a gun.
Cap gun.
And basically, worst thing in the world, how dare you do that? And they actually murdered people as a result of that. Having seen that film, walking out of there, I would not have shed a tear if the entire precinct had been bombed and blown up at that point. Because every cop in that film was culpable. They all were a part of it. They covered up or they just allowed it to continue. And I'm sorry, you don't get away with that. You just don't. Now, again, it's a film. I don't know how much of it was 100% accurate. Enough of it was, though, where we should all be outraged by that. I'm outraged that I wasn't taught this in school. And I'm outraged that we were in Alabama, in Birmingham, and, you know, we went to an amazing place for coffee, hung out with some people. It was really, really cool. And then I realized, hey, you know what? We're four blocks away from the church where the four girls were killed by white supremacists. And so we drove down there, and there it is, this memorial of just these four girls who were a victim of a terrorist act in this country. It's never called a terrorist act for some reason. Never called that. But this church was just bombed, on a Sunday, and they were killed. And it took forever. It took into the 21st century for somebody to be convicted of that crime. That's the kind of thing that you have to focus more attention on. I'm upset that that kids don't get taught this. You didn't know about it. I didn't even know it was in Birmingham. You know, we need to know our history. We need to know this is where that happened, and that's why it's important. And we need to go there, and we need to pay tribute to that. And it just doesn't happen enough.
Yeah, and being concerned about other history, Civil War history, or stupid history, mm-hmm. I think it's really does a disservice to our intellect, to our collective memory, and sharing these other stories and appreciating it for what it was in a different time, I think it's hard to do, but it's work that we have to do, and it just we got to ask the right questions, and I think that's the thing you start to see. You're starting to see it with the executive right now, and even I think police. I mean, it's a kind of a good question for calls. Do police ever not follow orders?
We're not taking calls.
Maybe
if we were though.
If you know about this, if you're a police officer, write us otw@2600.com. Do you ever not follow orders? Is there ever an instance where you can object and say, you know what, this is wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, are you willing to put your career or your stature with in the eyes of your peers? How does your moral compass affect the way you execute your job? Especially yes. In moments like protests. If you're one of those guys, you know, with the big shields and you go in with all the code numbers and everything, and you're on group whatever, and you rocking your whole team spirit for your precinct and stuff, is there ever a moment when you question the duty and the orders in the context of that? Because I have a feeling you get a lot of different answers. I'd really like to hear about that.
Yeah, that's where it takes guts to actually stand up to something that's not right, when nobody else will do it. And I know there are people out there that have guts enough to do that, and unfortunately we don't recognize them as much, or they pay a price. I do want to say, though, I'm very happy with where we've come. I'm happy that we're in a country now where people have finally reached the conclusion that Confederate statues are wrong. They're glorifying something that is evil.
Taking up space.
Well, yeah.
Put it that way.
Okay, if you want to be simplistic about it, sure. But
at the very least,
it's something that is ugly,
yeah.
And it's glorifying that. And, you know, I grew up on Long Island in the 70s and 80s, and Southern rock was very popular, and people drove around with Confederate flags all the time,
they
playing
still do.
The Marshall Tucker Band. Yeah, but, you know, you don't see it as much.
Mostly they're American flags, but I still get a little suspicious.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's gone. I'm saying it's improved. It's gotten better. There aren't people just basically unapologetically walking around talking about races in a bad way. At least they try to keep it down a little bit. But I'm glad to see us not tolerating it anymore. I'm glad to see people tearing down the statues on their own if their government doesn't work fast enough to do it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with authority, in that we're seeing this with states. We're seeing it on a lot of different initiatives where institutions are able to say, you know what, we're going to protect the protesters on this. You know, we're going to make a choice as a city or as a county or at the state level to be on the right side of this. We're not just going to enforce because we're somewhat affiliated with this area of responsibility in a bureaucracy.
And keep in mind, all this is happening with a neo-fascist in office, with a Republican Senate, with a Republican Congress, with Republicans running most of the states. Still, the voice of the people is being heard here. Progress is being made. And we're in a place that we were not in 10 years ago, and it's a better place as a result of that. But there are all kinds of bad things that are still happening. Like recently, Friday, in fact, the day that the hurricane began, this idiot Arpaio from Arizona was pardoned, you know, the sheriff by Trump. And to do that, even Republicans are speaking out against this. It is just such a thumbing of the nose of the court system. But this guy has so much blood on his hands. So many people died in his jails. He tortured people. He made people sleep in tents in triple-digit weather. chaining people to beds while they're giving birth. There are so many stories. We don't have time. We don't have time to go through all the stories. This is not a nice guy. Trump is not a nice guy. There are lots of people who are not nice people. And I don't want to be naive and say everybody's nice. We have to be respectful. Everybody is nice by default. You respect people by default. But when they prove themselves not worthy of either one, you act. You do something about it. All right? And that's how I feel about the current state of affairs in our government. It's not how I feel about the South. It's not how I feel about the people that we hung out with and visited and passed through, met on trains and watched the eclipse with. They're great people. They really are. I'm happy to
might not agree with everything.
And we don't have to. That's the thing. A lot of them are probably Trump supporters. And I understand why people would have voted for him. I really do.
We're well aware.
They're sick of the way things have been going, and they think a change might have been coming. But when you look at the actual actions of what some of these evil people have done in office, that is something there can be no compromise on. That is evil. That is wrong. That must be fought and defeated whenever possible. And we're not backing down. And I think we're getting stronger by the day. But all that said, we had a great time traveling around the country. We saw all four corners. We saw the Northwest. We saw the Southwest, the Southeast, the Midwest, and, of course, the Northeast. How did I get that wrong? It's five. Wait, what?
The Midwest is not a corner.
It's not a corner. Right.
Well, it is if it's like a polygon that like kind of goes down with Lake Michigan.
I learned something today.
Yeah, if it was a five-sided box.
We went to all these places. We went to all these places, and only the first part we flew to, but everything else was by train or by rental car. And
we really did see the country. We saw America.
We did. And I like what I saw for the most part. I have to say that.
I think we're, by and large, we're in a good spot as a people. But we've got to speak up and speak out.
Yes. And you know, let's leave it with a song about New Orleans, because of all the cities we saw, New Orleans, I think, really touched me the most. It's such an amazingly spirited place, full of music, full of just good humor. It was hot as hell. But seeing the people putting sandbags up, preparing for a possible hit by Harvey, it destroyed me seeing that, knowing what they went through in the past, and just these amazing people struggling just to get through the day, but keeping their dignity and humor throughout it. That, to me, is the most amazing thing. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. Yes, I'm walking to New Orleans.